Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Hello, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. Happy springtime. I'm your host, Roy Richards, as always. And for many of us here in North America, it's a most thankful end to a very harsh winter. Where I live in Iowa, over the first week in March, our temperature most days was in the teens, and a week later, our high temps were in the 70s, and the sun was out. That's quite a positive shock to the system. For most of us, bright sun and the warm spring winds provides at least a temporary burst of energy and a positive mental outlook. It's great to be alive, isn't it? Of course, spring comes around every year and challenges us to come out of our wintertime hibernation. But is the positive change of attitude fleeting, or will it last us throughout the year? That's the question. And here's a worthy goal for all of us this year: midlife renewal that lasts not just this spring, but over the years, every season. In the sweltering heat of the summer, which comes on before we know it, and next fall when the cold winds blow all the leaves off the trees, and next winter when once again we feel like we're trapped inside by the bitter cold and the deep snow. Over the next several programs, we're going to cover several aspects of midlife renewal, ways to bloom this spring. This week, our guest will talk about overcoming circumstantial depression, how to move from simply existing to living a life of joy, meaning, and purpose, whatever external challenges we may face. Next week, we'll help you clear those mental blocks inside that are blocking out love, joy, and freedom from your life and your connection, your spiritual connection to the higher being. That's a very essential element of midlife renewal. And in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about physical and relationship fitness at middle age, two absolutely essential elements of midlife renewal. And our bottom line message this year: let's give negative thinking a permanent ouster from our lives. And before we get started, repeat after me. I hereby vow to change my dominant outlook from negative to positive today, tomorrow, and for the rest of my life. Got it? I don't mean that you have to do that all in one setting, but that's your goal over the next few weeks. Okay, good. Now let's get on with the program. For those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, thank the Lord, winter's finally over. And for millions of you in the Northeast and Midwest U.S., weather this year has been unusually brutal, and you folks in New England win the prize. It's hard for me to even imagine the piles of snow that were higher than cars. But last Saturday, I was greeted by a lady on the street that said, "Welcome to our first nice day in forever." During this just past winter season of long nights, bitter cold, and digging out, it's not surprising that many of us suffered from wintertime blues. After all, we just battled the infamous quadruplets of winter: post-holiday letdown, cold and snow, less daylight, and cabin fever. And winter's an all-too-easy excuse to get mired down in non-beneficial habits and routines. But spring is here, and it's a great time to wake up positive emotions, get out of the house, renew old acquaintances, make new friends, and launch new projects. But if you've been down in the dumps lately, here are three questions that you should answer for yourself. First, are my recent feelings of depression or isolation really about the weather, or is there something else going on inside? Second, now that spring has finally arrived, am I fully prepared to snap out of my funk and rediscover the joy of daily living? And third, why can't I feel positive, connected, and contented all year long, regardless of the season? Wouldn't it be great to enjoy next winter without escaping to Florida and to banish negativity and the blues all year long? And my guest, Sky McKenzie, is here with suggestions on how to bring peace and joy into your life regardless of the season. And Sky McKenzie is not recovering from a long winter because she's from Australia, where it's just turning into fall. And she's a personal transformation life coach, a motivational speaker, and a workshop leader. She has a bachelor's degree in theology and a certificate in trauma care. And she's author of the book, 40 Days to Breakthrough, How to Move from Simply Existing to Living a Life of Meaning and Purpose. And that's a perfect title for this program. And hello, Sky, and welcome. And she's here to help us all thaw out emotionally.
Thank you, Roy. It's wonderful to be here with you. I did escape your harsh winter, although we have been seeing it on the news. Even in Australia, you've had a really harsh winter.
I'd rather see it on the news than experience it in person.
Exactly. My thoughts have been with you because I felt the same way. I'm sure you're all thinking, you know, I'd rather escape it than see it on the news than be there.
Yeah, for a while I lived in Southern California, and I always used to chuckle when I'd see the weather forecast from back east what I'd escape. But
Yes.
Statistics reveal that depression is at an all-time high worldwide, though, both in warm and cold climates. But you indicate there are two different categories of depression, clinical and circumstantial. What are the definitions, and why is it so critically important to understand the difference?
Well, thank you for getting straight into that question. The very interesting thing is that for many years, people have been struggling with depression, and they will go to their doctor and say that they have symptoms of feeling sad, feeling lonely, feeling isolated, feeling confused, not being able to make decisions, sleeping too much, all of those symptoms of depression. And the first thing that a GP will do is write out a prescription for antidepressants. In fact, antidepressants are actually a $12 billion industry in the United States alone. And it is the number one best-selling drug in medical practice in the United States. So through my own experience, I began to, my own experience of actually feeling depressed due to my circumstances and going to the doctor and explaining my situation to him. And the first thing he did was try to write out this prescription for antidepressants. And instinctively, I just knew to say to him, I don't need drugs. I need to change my circumstances.
Yeah.
And I kind of guess he probably looked at me as if to say, well, then why are you here if you know that? But what actually happened was I was in a situation where I was circumstantially depressed and I didn't really know how to change my circumstances. And so that's the difference here between clinical depression, which we know is talked about a lot as a chemical imbalance in the brain.
Yeah.
However, even today, scientists and medicine cannot determine healthy levels of chemicals in the brain. So they can determine levels, but they don't know what is a healthy level and what is an imbalance. Which is exactly
they can tell
the
you what your level is, but they can't tell you what the level means.
Yeah, because and the reason for that is because they change so rapidly. So somebody can go for a run and they get a burst of serotonin, the level changes drastically. Somebody goes out for dinner with some friends, has a good laugh, feels so good, goes home and feels depressed again. Mm-hmm. So there really is a real problem with this concept of chemical imbalance and labeling somebody as clinically depressed. The difference between chemical imbalances, clinical depression and circumstantial depression, is that circumstantial depression is directly related to a person's circumstances.
Yeah.
And it really is not a sickness of the brain, it's a sickness of the heart. So it really is. Yeah, it's the pain of living without hope or existing in negative circumstances, as you've just already mentioned, those long winter periods of not being able to get out into the fresh air can trigger depression.
Yeah.
And there are two questions that a person can ask, Roy, to determine whether or not their depression is clinical or circumstantial.
Yeah, I noticed on your website you talked about this quick quiz. Those two questions.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes, yes, because it makes so much sense when you see and hear these questions. And the first one is, if I leave my negative circumstances for a short time and I feel better, and then I go back into those negative circumstances and feel bad again, chances are you're living with circumstantial depression. And I'll tell you a very quick story to illustrate that. A friend of mine's daughter was living in a very negative, abusive relationship. Her partner was verbally and emotionally abusive. But she had a wonderful relationship with her sister. So every weekend she would leave the house on Friday afternoon and she would drive for 2 hours to go and visit her sister. And they would have fun and they would laugh and they would go and walk on the beach and all of these things. And she would refer to these weekends as her sister fix. And every Sunday afternoon when she drove home back to these negative circumstances, as she got closer and closer to her home, she would begin to feel this depression fall on her as like a blanket coming over her.
Wow.
She eventually realized, I have to get out of this negative relationship.
Yeah.
And that actually completely cured her. But in the meantime, doctors were trying to put her onto antidepressants.
Yeah.
So her depression was directly related to her circumstances, and it's known as circumstantial depression. And the other one is, did something happen before the depression set in? So did you have a job loss or a geographical move? That was what my situation was. I moved from New Zealand to Australia, so to a tiny little mining town. I couldn't get work there. I was alone a lot as my husband traveled. And I didn't realize it until it was too late, but I'd set into this very severe depression.
Boy, that sounds depressing for anybody.
Exactly. Isolation and loneliness is debilitating. Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it is. It is a debilitating situation for people.
Yeah, the problem with its specific circumstances in life is if you're in a really abusive relationship, or you really hate your job, or something like that, it almost the depression can spill over even into the weekends. So that
exactly.
You know, the weekends are all too short, and you may start getting depressed Sunday morning, or even earlier, just thinking
Absolutely.
About getting back into the bad circumstance that you have.
Yes, you're right, Roy. Many people work in jobs they hate, so they're circumstantially depressed from their employment situation. Now, the interesting thing is that unhappily married people have the highest rates of depression.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I noticed that from your website.
Yes, yes. So an unhappy or tension-filled marriage actually also, it makes women three times more likely to get depressed in the same relationship than men. And that's because for women, their relationships are their major source of feeling about themselves and their self-esteem. Where for men, their major source of self-esteem is their achievements.
Yeah,
and
that's fascinating. I noticed that on your website, and it really hit home because I know my wife oftentimes gets all upset over a casual comment that a friend or a neighbor made or something that she'll dwell on at length
and
say, what's the importance of that? And yet I got extremely depressed at past points in my life when things weren't going well, when I missed a promotion or whatever at work or something like that.
Right, yes.
And my wife would say, well, you still have the family and you still have your friends.
Yes. So as you say, it's really good to know that these are the way men and women relate to their source of self-esteem and how to deal with that. Recently, an American Psychological Association, they published a report in the New York Times to say that depression is misdiagnosed approximately 30-50% of the time.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, almost half the time people are going to a doctor and they are getting antidepressants instead of dealing with either, dealing with their circumstances, as we're talking about now, or even perhaps it's another medical condition.
Those medicines are just kind of covering up the problem. They're not really addressing the problem. They're not curing the problem, I would think.
Exactly. And many times they don't even cover it up. They actually have not yet proved to be effective in the situation of depression. Exactly. So that is really, it's extremely sad that it's the highly effective advertising campaigns here in the States, that where pharmaceutical companies are advertising directly to the consumer, and they're asking them to go and talk to their doctor about it, and it's a $12 billion industry, and they have dreadful side effects. They really do.
I was going to ask you about some of the tragic consequences of this treatment with medication. I guess sometimes it can even lead to suicide if it's...
There is a report out that actually says that high doses of antidepressants in teenagers has actually led to more suicides.
Wow.
So, antidepressants are not yet a drug that has been identified to help depression, simply because, as we've mentioned, these chemical levels can change so radically in a person's brain. The interesting thing was this report that I just mentioned about from the American Psychological Association said that there is a different way, to a better way, and an alternative a solution for those struggling with circumstantial depression. Rather than taking antidepressants, they concluded, this panel of psychologists concluded that a more effective approach was for people to take some positive step, even if it was a small symbolic one, towards changing the circumstances that were leading to their depression.
Yeah, that would make a lot more sense than, continue to battle against something that you can't control, when as maybe take a small step over something you can control, and
exactly.
can lead to a world of difference. But
yes, exactly. So I understand completely that there are some people who even, a big step, a big change is just too hard. And when they're really feeling down and miserable and lonely and isolated and confused, it really is too hard to ask somebody to completely move out of their negative circumstances.
Unrealistic.
Yes.
Or
there are
say,
things that people can take.
You can also say, well, I'm going to completely move out of my negative circumstances. I'm going to quit my job. And then you might feel good for a day or two. Then you start the new negative circumstances, not having a job. And
I have no money.
Find a new one without really addressing, the inner feelings and what you really want out of life.
Yes, exactly. And that's why they advocate for small positive steps. So each day to actually – and there's two things to work on. There's something to work on internally. How do I make myself feel better in my circumstances in the meantime?
Yeah.
And then how do I actually change the negative circumstances that I'm in that are causing this depression?
Yeah, you can make little steps internally and externally to make circumstances better in your present situation. And at the same time, be looking for a major overhaul or a change in that circumstance over time.
Yes. And usually when we actually take the steps to make ourselves feel better, better about ourselves, then we actually are more able to cope with taking those steps to change our circumstances.
Well, in your book, you describe your own personal triumph in the introduction from depression to breakthrough in 40 days. You described a little bit about the negative circumstances in that new town with no job and loneliness. And, briefly describe what worked for you. How did you come up with this method, or what got you going toward a more positive outlook and, the wonderful circumstances you're in presently as an author and a coach and motivational speaker.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, Roy, I was at rock bottom. I was, as you've mentioned, living in this tiny little town, not being able to find work for the work that I do. I was in advertising, etc., and there was nothing like that in this mining town. And my husband traveled a lot, so he was away a lot, and one day I was walking through my garden and I really was considering, really, I don't know what to do. My radical change for me would be to move out of this town. If I moved out of this town, I would have to move out of the marriage. So I was really considering what are my options here.
Yeah.
And as I was walking through the garden, and it was causing problems in the marriage too. It was causing tremendous relationship problems.
Partner is unhappy in a marriage, the marriage is not going to be a pleasant situation for either
situation.
Part.
Exactly, yes. So I was walking through my garden and I actually said these words. I said, I've lived in 4 different countries. I've had 3 different marriages. I said, different places, different faces, same problems.
Yeah.
And as I said that, I found myself saying aloud, I'm the one common denominator here. I said, I have to find out what's going on with me.
So few of us are willing to admit that.
When
we go from one bad circumstance to another, the one common denominator is me. I love that.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the questions that I often get asked on radio interviews is, do you recommend a geographical change? And I have to say, well, it depends on the motivation.
Yeah.
If you've really looked at yourself and you've looked at what's going on in your circumstances and you've realized that actually my life will be better where there's more friends, more job opportunities, more people, all of those things.
Warmer
weather. Yes, exactly. And, you've researched it, and with a rational mind, you've discussed it, and that's a decision you've made. Of course, a geographical move can help greatly. However, if you're thinking, well, I'm going to be better over there, life's going to be much better over there, and you just go and move over there, always remember that one of the boxes that you pack on the truck or the ship or wherever you're going has a box with your name on it, and you take yourself with it.
Yeah, a couple one time that both the husband and wife kind of disliked their jobs, and they weren't that bad, but we're going to go to California and we'll be happy out there. And neither of them had jobs arranged out in California. And about 3 months later, they were back in Michigan, where they came from, trying to get their old jobs back.
Yes, that is exactly right. So there was no, real sense of planning and purpose behind it all. And that is the key. So I'm not against a geographical change, or I'm not for a geographical change. It just totally depends on your circumstances and whether you've or just, as you say, getting away from it, chances are you'll end up back or more miserable, or whether you've really realized this is what you need to do. You need to make that geographical change.
So once you discovered you were the common denominator, then what were the next steps that got you out of the...
Yes. So I did 2 things, actually. I actually had been very aware, because it's come to my attention, of an organization that deals with childhood trauma. And I actually I booked myself in with fear and trembling to do a week-long healing retreat to deal with my child abuse. And that was extremely helpful for me, because 87% of people who suffer from depression have actually experienced some form of childhood trauma.
Yeah, and isn't that amazing? It all goes back to childhood, and yet so few
it all goes back
realize
to childhood.
That,
exactly.
Deep down in, somebody implanted some negative in our subconscious, or we had traumatic experience, or whatever.
Yes. And a lot of people won't go there because they say, oh, it's in the past. I'm not going to face the past again. I'm not going to go back to the past. But they don't realize that, as you've just said, the past is with us every single day of our lives until we do go back, face it, deal with it, and move on.
Yeah,
and
we've got to recognize it before we can face it.
That sense of awareness, exactly. Awareness, we'll never change anything if we're not aware that it needs to be changed.
Well, why 40 days? And from the Bible, you point out the significance of 40 days in the lives of Noah, Jesus, and Moses. And why do you believe 40 days is an that length of time to gain clarity, fulfillment, happiness? What's the magic of 40 days?
Well, at the same time, while I was thinking I'll go and do this residential healing retreat, I cried out to God and I said, God, you have to help me. What do I do? I really don't know what to do. And I felt that I needed to to really seek him and about my life for a period of 40 days. And so as I started to read, I realized how many amazing things happened in a period of 40 days. And Jesus was in the wilderness for 40 days.
Yeah.
And after that, he came out and started his ministry. So
yeah.
If one needs a new career, something new in life, 40 days. The rain fell on the earth while Noah was in the ark for 40 days.
Yeah,
and
right.
That was a cleansing of the whole earth, you know, something, a brand new beginning. And then interestingly enough, Noah waited 40 days before he actually opened the window to let the dove out to see if there was dry land.
Yeah.
So, and then Moses was on the top of the mountain when he got the Ten Commandments. He was there for 40 days and 40 nights, and he got instructions for living. And we even follow those instructions for living today. So if we need instructions for living, for our life, we can use that 40 days. When Moses sent the scouts into the promised land to go and search it out and look and see what it was like, he said, go and scout the land for 40 days. And so we can actually look at the land as being our own lives. And, you know, on day 28 actually is a day that says scout the land. And it gives that story of how Moses going to tell the scouts, this is what you need to look for. What are the people like? And what are the towns and cities like? Are they strong? And we can relate that to our lives. What are the people like in our lives? Are they bringing us down, or are they building us up? And
interesting. You scout for 40 days, maybe new people you might want to meet, or the new experiences you might want to experience.
Exactly. So I never intended to write a book. I actually did this 40-day program. I said, okay, God, I'll do 40 days.
Yeah.
And every day I just journaled what was happening with me. And I decided to take an action step. And this was before I even knew about this report. That the psychologist has concluded that it would be a much better approach to take these small action steps, positive steps, toward change. So I decided to do an action step. And really, in the beginning, it was just simply some days all I did was just listen to a positive song all day so that I knew my mind was just thinking positively and feeling good about myself all day. The other action steps that I love, and they talk about this on the report, is they say these small symbolic steps, even if it's a symbolic one. And one of the wonderful symbolic ones I love is letting go the past. And so I have a few little tips and ideas where people can write down all of the things they want to let go from their past on pieces of paper and then tie them to the string of helium balloons. And I had seven. I had seven helium balloons that I took out, tied the string on the paper from my past, and I took them outside and I just watched them leave and, you know, leave into the atmosphere. And something really significant happens and takes place in your life when you do something symbolic like that.
And then somebody on the other side of Australia discovered those for you.
Actually, a few of them popped. Quite high up, I saw them pop and come back to the field. But a number of them I saw go right beyond the clouds. So that was very interesting, yes. Another idea, if you don't want to use the helium balloon idea, is to go down to the $2 shop or the dollar shop I think you have here and buy a cheap statue, and then write on the statue all of the things with a permanent marker, the things that you want to let go of in your life, and really get out there and bash that statue to dust and let it go in the garden or the creek or a river or something. And
of course,
it really
you're polluting
does
the waters.
We hope not. It's pottery. It should be a porcelain pottery statue.
Yeah, that's true. It's
so it's clay.
here in Iowa, the Des Moines Water Works is going to sue some counties up in northern Iowa for all the nitrates the farmers
really?
Into the water.
Okay, well, maybe bury it in the garden then. Bury it in the garden.
I like you write these little notes and throw them in the fire is another thing I guess you can
That's a lovely one, exactly. Write it all down and burn them.
Well, on your website, you actually offer 10 winning tips for navigating life change, and one of them is that balloon or that writing those down. But what are a few of the other winning tips that, and by the way, people can get that for free on your website, right?
That yes, they can. They just go to my website, as you said, and skymckenzie.me, and they can download that for free. A PDF ebook of these 10 winning tips to help people, as you say, just take these small steps to moving out of their negative circumstances and into meaning and purpose.
Give me another couple of them that people can
use. Sure, sure. The first one I really love is allow yourself to recognize your feelings. You know, we often when we're sad and miserable, we think, oh, we can't have a good cry, or we need to pull ourselves together. And now it is a problem if we're crying for a month, but allow ourselves to recognize what we're feeling at the time that we're feeling them. And it's for some of us, we've buried our feelings for so long, we may not even know what we're feeling.
Yeah, we need to recognize what our feelings are and why we're feeling them. You know, what's causing that?
What's causing them, exactly. So even if for a few days you just start a little, tiny little feeling diary or journal, or even in your normal diary, you just put a sentence at the bottom. Often our feelings are not a whole day. It's something happened today and that made me feel down, or I got a phone call from a friend that made me feel up, you know, so more positive. So am I feeling sad? Am I feeling angry? Am I feeling joyful? Am I feeling happy? All of those things, if we can name those feelings, it really does begin to help us to, as we recognize them and we can deal with them, and it really does begin to help us move out of those negative circumstances.
Winning tips that really hit home to me is this little by little, and you point out that so many of our when people make New Year's resolutions, they make some grandiose promise to themselves that they'll never keep, and then they're discouraged if they don't immediately see results. And rather than little changes that you can, do little by little, and then credit yourself and praise yourself for accomplishing those little changes.
Absolutely. And another tip is take time to nurture yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And that's exactly right. As you take those little steps, as it says there, to climb Mount Everest, you don't just suddenly arrive at the top. You started at the bottom and you've taken steps. And also you created a plan. And that's actually day one of the 40-Day to Breakthrough program. It tells a story about how Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came to him and said, Moses, what you're doing is not good. You need to do something different. We need to create a plan for you here, because Moses was in the wilderness with these millions of Israelites who were complaining and moaning and didn't know what to do and couldn't fend for themselves, work things out for themselves. And there was this queue a mile long every day, and he was trying to be the judge of all of these people, and he was wearing himself out. And his father-in-law came and said to him, Moses, what you're doing is not good. You need to do something different. And that's a great principle for us. Is what we're doing working, or do we need to do something different? Even from day one, sorry Roy, even from day one, to take a look at our circumstances and see, is there anything that we can do differently in our plan of going little by little and nurturing ourselves?
When we want to go, say, to Colorado or some other state, we don't just set off without looking at a map or consulting GPS or something. And obviously, if you want to get somewhere else in your life, you better have a plan of how to get there, a route somewhat sketched out of where you're going. You don't have to fill in all the details on day one, obviously, but you start thinking about the where you want to go and have a plan to get there.
Yes. And the other thing with little by little is that often if we make a mistake, or as you say, things haven't worked out exactly as we did plan, we have a tendency to give up. But actually it's
true.
To continue, to just keeping. I love a phrase that I hear Steve Harrison say regularly, and it's keep stumbling forward. So, even if you have to do some stumbling, as long as you just stumble forward, keep taking those little steps. And if one doesn't work out that day,
when you make a mistake, you stop and analyze what needs to be modified, and then you make a small correction rather than junk the whole program or sitting around being depressed for the next 6 months.
Exactly. And that's why each day I give someone a story, a reading, and then there's a meditation as to what to meditate on in your life in relation to that reading. Some journaling. Journaling is a wonderful way to get your subconscious working and those thoughts down on paper.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can look back at what you've journaled and written 20 days later and think, wow, that's amazing. And so just to sit down and journal for a few minutes each day about what's going on in your life, about that reading, that meditation, it just really creates an amazing revelation. And then we take an action step each day, and I ask to evaluate that action step. As you've said, if it hasn't proved to be very successful, that doesn't matter. Just do a different one the next day.
Yeah, that's exactly what we were just talking about. You evaluate each day, and you take those little steps each day. And I love that, the way you break it down to meditation and then the action step. And, you do these various exercises together, but you make sure you get each of them done, because if you just meditate and don't do anything to move forward that day, you're not going to get much of anywhere.
It's the same as taking the antidepressants every day and not taking an action step, isn't it? So, to move out of the circumstances. Exactly.
Well, a common problem of middle age is fear of the future based on painful past experience. And if that's the problem, how do you let go of the past and convince yourself it's time to move on? Any suggestions for that?
I think one has to get to the point where they realize they just don't want to be where they are at anymore. As long as we're sitting in this comfort zone, even if it's an internal prison, sometimes, and it can feel very comfortable to us. It may not be very pleasant. It may not be very happy, but we feel like we're sitting in this comfort zone.
Yeah, and we can blame circumstances or other people for this comfort zone, which foolishly takes the pressure off us to change, even though we're miserable in our present
station. Yes, and then that becomes our situation normal, actually. All we're doing is complaining about our lives day after day after day, year after year after year. And before we know it, that's how we're living. That's our situation normal.
And nobody particularly wants to be around us either, because they're tired of hearing the complaining.
That's it, exactly. So one has to get to the point where there's that awareness, yes, I want to change. I want to change my circumstances. And then to take these 40 days is a great principle, a quantity of time. It's a great amount of time where, you can be on antidepressants for years or you can do 40 days.
Yeah.
And what actually happens with this, on day 14, I ask in the book to people to go back from and have a look through their journal on from day one and to create a little summary, get a big A3 sheet of paper out and to create a summary of all the words and the phrases that have been coming through in their journal over the last 14 days.
Yeah,
and I don't know.
Interim review there.
Exactly. It's kind of a little, a little recap in the middle. Yeah. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know anyone yet who hasn't said, wow, what came through was amazing. I've got some sense of direction. Now, it's only day 14. They've got to keep going through to day 36, where we do a total summary.
Oh,
and day 37, 8, and 9 are around that summary. And 40 is day of Thanksgiving, obviously. We're finished.
And a big party.
Yes, exactly.
celebration.
Yes. But so out of these, these journalings, the meditations, people are actually creating this plan with that already within themselves. They already know what it is they want to do, but it's lost in the confusion. It's lost in the loneliness, the isolation, the just the circumstances. And in doing the program one step at a time, one day at a time, they begin to form a plan out of what is already inside of them as to how they know, people know, everyone knows inside really what they want to do about their circumstances.
Yeah, what I love about your book, 40 Days to Breakthrough, is it's not a real worry. They're just real short 40 chapters, but they're so practical, and they're not something you just read through. And, I think if I had the book, I'd probably read just one chapter a day, and then I'd I guess you could skim the whole book if you wanted first, but you know, you really have to take it one day at a time and follow up and work along with the book to really get the maximum benefit out of it.
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, there's something about that 40 days. There's so many other examples. I haven't even shared them all. You know, I could spend another 5 minutes. I know when Jonah went to Nineveh, he was told to tell Nineveh they had 40 days to repent or they would be destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was Elijah, I can't remember now, Elijah was given a meal and then said that meal, he then fasted for 40 days. He was able to survive a whole 40 days on a particular meal that an angel brought him. So it just seems to be everywhere, the concept of 40 days, and something happens, there's breakthrough when you decide to take 40 days out of your life and focus on it and look at it intently, become aware, and create little steps of change.
And that's a great time because it's long enough to really accomplish something, and yet it's not so long that it's overwhelming. You know, I have to dedicate the next 3 years to change.
Yes.
Even 6 months, it's 40 days.
Exactly.
A realistic period. In fact, if they'd started the 40 days in Lent, aren't there? So that would have been a good Lent.
That's exactly right. Yes, it is. Exactly. It's 40 days from Ash Wednesday to Easter Friday. Lent is 40 days. So there's great significance in the concept of taking 40 days to look at your life.
So where best should someone go to preview your book or to purchase it?
Amazon.com, they can see a preview. They can see a good couple of pages. They see the whole index of what each day is about, and they'll find day one there, the story of Moses. They'll find a few other days there. So they can preview the book on Amazon, and they can purchase direct from Amazon if they like it, Amazon.com.
Yeah. And they can also go to your website to get that free 10 tips to changing your life. I really appreciate that. I looked at that this morning and got a lot of good ideas out of that. What's your website address again?
Good. That is skymckenzie.me. So Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, McKenzie, M-C-K-E-N-Z-I-E, skymckenzie.me.
And you also offer coaching and retreats and workshops. Tell us a little about, and you're also available as a public speaker. Where should people go to find out about those opportunities?
Yes. My website has all of the information. Under the speaking tab, they'll find a one sheet on all the topics that I speak about and the audiences that I speak to. And the coaching is directly related to the 40-day program. If people feel that they won't be able to do it by themselves, then we have a one-hour session on day one to talk about where they're at and where they want to be. And we do day one together, of the importance of a plan. We do that together. And then every 5 days, we do a 20-minute phone call.
And you have clients here in North America and Canada and U.S. as well as in Australia, I guess.
Yes, definitely, yes. Skype is wonderful, yes. We call via Skype, and that's proved very successful. I've just had one lady finish that, and she's given me such a wonderful reference. I'm going to put that up on my website soon. So,
can we men read your book, too, or is it mostly for women?
It's definitely not only for women. There's, you know, my second book, 40 Days to Healthy Self-Esteem, is going to be a lot more feminine and a lot more for women. And that's out in July. And it's a 40-day program similar to this. But
that's
this
called
book,
40
Days
to Self-Esteem, right? The second
40
book.
Days to Healthy Self-Esteem, yes.
Oh, okay. Healthy Self-Esteem, yes.
Healthy Self-Esteem, yes. And that's instead of taking an action step each day, I've got an affirmation. So it's going to be an I am statement, and we're going to do meditation in the journal around that I am statement and then an affirmation that they read each day to build their self-esteem. And that's more focused, as I say, on women. But 40 Days to Breakthrough is definitely not focused on women. It's gender specific and not gender specific, and available for men and women if they want breakthrough in their lives.
Well, I certainly appreciate the exposure to your wonderful 40-day program. And the weather's warmer, so that's no winter's no longer an excuse. And I know you feel a rush of adrenaline like I do on these warm spring days, but nice weather alone is not enough. And anyway, if you're in Florida or California, it's nothing new anyway. And if you've been down in the dumps for some time now, if you've been sleepwalking through life like I did for about 30 years, I highly recommend you go to Sky's website or to Amazon and preview her book. And don't forget to preview my book also, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up at MiddleAgeRenewal.com. And whether you're 40, 50, or 60, it's never too late to change direction and bring positive momentum back into your life and simply be who you were wonderfully created to be. And now let's all go out and enjoy spring and the joyful, purpose-filled life we all so richly deserve. And thank you so much, Sky, for joining us today. You've certainly opened some eyes.
You're welcome. Thank you, Roy. It was wonderful to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
And tell all your friends back in Australia that the U.S. is giving a shout-out, and have a great day and a great remaining visit here in the States. And let's all go out and enjoy spring.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Roy.
Thank you, Sky.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, MiddleAgeRenewal.com.